session number 25525, Reel 1.
Richard Hughes, Reel 1. Could I ask you when you were born and where that was?
On the 6th of December 1917, in New Tredegar, Monmouthshire, South Wales.
And what sort of community did you live in, and what did your father do?
Well, it was rather large. The family was quite a large one. Pardon me. 10 children. I was born. My father was killed in the war in September 1917. I was born on the 6th of December 1917. So that made me a war baby. And from then, well, I graduated up into school and do what then. Right?
How did your mother cope without?
Yes, she had rather a tough time at that time. And one thing to say, there was quite a family. My father's brother lived a couple of doors down and over. He helped out. And once it was all over, it was all right. That was still what. But my mother remarried what was known as my father's brother, a younger brother. So, after a while, of course, little, I was still a youngster then, very young. There was two more children born, half sister and a half brother.
What was your home like? Can you remember much about your home?
Yes, we lived a very homely life. We were a bit crowded, cramped. I had two elder sisters. And how many boys? Four lads. We were all, well, living in a three-bedroom house, you might say, in the old-fashioned terrace house. They were built at a time, I think, possibly, that when the slate quarries up in all fields were fading out, all the slate quarry workers moved south into the mines, and they were working in the power of Dufferin, they called it. And of course, my father, I didn't know him, I don't know, but he was a miner before he was called up for the 1914-18
war. What sort of community did you live in?
Well, it was, the whole community was a miners' community, and they were all people who had moved in to the area for the purpose of that, to get the coal out. Well, there was nothing else for them to do. And
what was your home life like? What did you do at home?
Well, we were quite a happy family. I mean, there wasn't much to do. In fact, not as it is today. There was no telecommunication and that kind of thing. And I must say, we didn't follow the Holy Scriptures very much either. But we lived along with on the chapel. But the life generally was good. I mean, my mother, she was really marvelous how she coped, but I think back on it. Then my elder brother took charge then. After a while, and he decided it was time to get out. this was in about 1927, I should think. A situation moving up in Dalgarrig, a little place up in North Wales in the Conwy Valley. There was an aluminium factory opened up there, a Scotch firm opened it. So he went up and reconnoitred the place, and he liked it. I thought he was my older brother, so. I think it would be 1927, possibly. We moved up there, all the family. And it was a much better environment. This country and went to school there, school time. I had to walk a mile and a half to school each day, but it didn't matter, it was good.
What do you remember about your school days?
Other than playing football and attending the singing lessons. And I did start with the violin as well there, but that fell by the wayside. My poor mother died in 1930, I think, 1928 or 38, while she was up there. And I'm afraid that was the crunch of the whole situation. I mean, the stepfather, he wasn't he had two children of his own, a two half sister and brother, he enjoyed with them, but I'm afraid with us it was that old stigma of stepfather, and it didn't work out. So gradually the elder part of the family all either got married or moved out. I was left to, I was only 14, 15. Well, earlier than that, 13, to look after the two half-brother and half-sister. I'm afraid that got on top of me at the end. Apart from that, I started work. School leaving age in those days was 14. And I had a kind old gentleman living next door. He was the chemist out of the local factory there. So he applied for me to be early released from school. Left about 13 and a half, I mean. So I went to work for the aluminium factory in Dalgarrig in the chemist, what they call the chemist assistant.
And what were your duties? What was your job?
Analysing the furnaces used to produce the, or melt down the alumina into dewar, and they used to put little pieces aside for me to go collect every morning, and I would analyse it. I've been trained to do this. I used to have a senior chemist there. It was really good. I enjoyed doing that, I must say. And other than that, was to go and fetch fags for the boss. But it was good. I enjoyed it. I got on well with everybody.
Do you remember how much you got paid?
I would say it was about 7 and 6 a week. That's right. And that, I had to park into my stepfather's house when I went finished on a Friday. So I didn't get much out of it. That my time was spent, playing football and doing like that. Running, and more often than not, I was rumbling in the mountains over the top there. It was lovely. Yeah. And then, of course, as I say, things came to a head in the end, and I started thinking about joining the Navy. So we started in mid-1933, that's how I wrote. Then I got a note to go to Liverpool for a nursing medical and education exam. And then I came back home, and then about 2 or 3 days in the August, I think it was, they sent a letter saying I would be contacted again. And they gave me a date to join in February 1934. So I just turned my 16th birthday then. And we were all put on, they were very good, I mean, the people organizing. So I went along a train ride to Liverpool, spent the night there in one of the Salvation Army home or something they had in Cannon Street. And then on the following morning, got a rude awakening, typical naval style, as you think. I didn't know much about it then, was it fine? And I went into breakfast, had a better breakfast there for a long time. And we went on a train down to London. I think it was 8 of us all together joined from that area. And we got down to Euston. From Euston, you went across to eastbound side. I don't know which side of London it was.
Liverpool Street?
It could well have been indeed, yes. So we boarded a train for Harwich.
Yes, it would have been Liverpool.
That would have been, yeah. So, of course, you're right there on Harwich. My first taste of the sea. Had a trip across for Harwich to Felixstowe, where Ganges was. So I didn't have much time to think then. Well, it was getting on for 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the day finishing. And he rigged us out with a kit. Took all your civvies off you. Well, the civvies, they weren't mine, they were my brothers. And,
what kit were you issued with, do you remember? What sort of kit were you issued with? You
very, very basic in the first instance. Until you, I think, finished the first 4 weeks. And then they kitted you out fully with a proper kit. And you started sewing your name in it, and it was all stamped there, and then you sewed your name in red cotton in it. So all that thing was right for me first. It was, we'd only been there, we arrived, I think, on about the 28th, something like that, February. Had a night's kip, well, you had cocoa and hard biscuits. And then we were told to go over the mast. Of course, I've never seen such a thing in my life before. But however, we survived it. The Shotley mast was famous. And then we came. And then we did the basic month's training. Just square bashing, and do what kind of thing, and cleaning and do what. And then you were given a proper uniform, a proper kit. You got to and then you started putting your name in it.
Do you remember the kit?
The kits?
Yeah, what were you given after a month?
Well, you were given 2 suits. A working suit, the blue suit, and the new one. And of course, the old flannel shirts, which is what you slept in those days, And I think we were the last class to be issued to them. They issued pajamas after that. And likewise, when they give you toiletries, remind me, they give us an open razor, which I mean, I'd only seen my old man using them. But, you know. And that too was the last occasion they issued them things. So, so we got home. Right? I mean, some of us didn't shave. I don't think I shave very many. And then, during that time, the 9 months training that you do there, you did all kinds of things. First thing I had to do was pass the swimming test. So I was out to be a monk at 6 o'clock in the morning down the swimming pool, training for that.
Could you swim before?
I couldn't swim before, no, no. And that was a must. Reasonable. And
where did you live? Can you describe your living accommodation?
Oh, there were big, yes, there were big dormitories with about 30 beds at the far end on what we used to call the mess square. And that's the way you found me. You had all your tables laid out there. And you used to go down the galley and bring your dishes back, put them on the table, and the senior rates, or the senior hand, would dish them out on each plate. And you go and sit on the nice clean tables, well scrubbed. And that kind of thing. And after that, well, after the first month, you were all graded. Some went on to telegraphy. And visual signals, and seaman. I went into the seaman branch, which was a 9 month course. I wanted to get out of there as quick as I can. The signal branch, they stayed there for 18 months, which was quite a long time.
And what did your training involve as a seaman?
As a seaman, well, of course, naturally, first thing comes all knots and splices, that kind of thing. Sailing, which we used to go down into the harbour, we used to have our own sailing boats there. They were down. I used to do all kind of things, what they called seamanship rivers. I was used in the hoist. You've seen the gun crews of the at the tournament, much the same kind of thing as that. And of course, you know, sailing, knots and splices. And that was about it, really, before Reggie, if we were ready to see.
Can you describe a typical day during your training at HMS Ganges?
Well, let's start off out cocoa and biscuits first thing in the morning. We have the the instructors coming around making an awful noise. And we would go on parade on the big square. And then there would be a bit of a march past, sort of get everybody organized. And from there you would disperse to your various instructions. Some would go to seamanship, some would go to the gun battery, because they had a 6-inch battery there we used to go down. And until lunchtime, and cooks to the galley would go, you'd all go to the mess. Cooks to the mess would go down to the galley and bring up the dishes of food and would dish it out. Then you'd clear up. And then the assembly would sound after lunchtime for the afternoon session, but most of that was organized as physical training, that kind of thing. You might go down to the gymnasium, or you might go down to the swimming pool, or things like that. It was all do as you were graded yourselves, which way you wanted to go, football, cricket, whichever. I was more interested in the football.
The evenings?
No, they were spent. Sometimes you could, well, more often than not, you used to go for a walk over the fields, because they used to have some big recreation pads there, which you used to go over and walk around. On the weekends, of course, on a Saturday afternoon, you were given a couple of hours free time, which you would go ashore and have a walk around. You couldn't do too much because you didn't have much money to do it with. And that's most of the thing was done, as you see. Sit down and, well, you should read your seamanship money, we'll get ready for the next day.
What about Sundays?
Oh, yes, that was a religious one. There'd be a prayer ground, come on, march past. And then from there you would march down to the church, and we'd all have a church service there. The Roman Catholics, of course, they spent their way with the daughter. It was quite a good day, really. But, and once you finished the service, you went and had dinner. We used to call it dinner. And the rest of the day was your own. You made your leisure. More often than not, the weather was decent, you went and walked around the perimeter, around the fence there. Do what? Or if you had any money, you'd go ashore. You'd go for a walk up to Harwich. Other than that, it was very routine.
What was the discipline like?
Oh, it was terrific. That was terrific. I must say, we were probably the last of our crowd to really experience that kind of thing. Although, having said that, it depended entirely on the instructors you had. If they had any humanity about them at all, they were all right. I remember Tosh Arden, that was our chief gunner's mate. Petty Officer Petty, he was a torpedo man. But they were Tosh Arden, and he was a typical, the old sailor, but Pettison, he was as though he had children of his own, you know. And he was all right.
Did you ever get into trouble?
No. Yes, I think I must have been down the far end, down what we used to call Laundry Hill. That was the punishment hill there. And I think there was somebody stopped me, a few of us stopped me, and he searched me, and he found a butt end in my belt pouch. And that was the only time I forget what I got.
What happened to the laundry?
I think what we used to call yankers. I think you got about 10 days yankers. And that wasn't over here. It was just that you had to report every half hour somewhere, especially during your leisure hours. You couldn't get away with it. But that was the only time, because you weren't allowed to smoke, and I did smoke before I went in there. But there was no smoking at all, and I lived by it as well.
How did you adjust to Navy life and discipline and the lack of privacy?
Well, that was from my younger life, I suppose. It wasn't too difficult to adapt. I missed my mother terrifically. But when I went in the end, I thought, well, you made your bed, you've got to lie in it, kind of thing. So after that spot of all, it was all right. I went on. I was picked for the football team, put for the athletics team, and so I enjoyed life there. And then, of course, came the time to go to sea. We're really excited now.
How did you keep in contact with your family whilst you were training?
I used to write occasionally to them, but I didn't get a lot back. Probably my brother that I have now, there's just the one brother left. He's 19, he lives in Northfield still. He used to make contact with me, and I used to keep contact with him, but other than that.
Did you have any home leave?
Yeah, we used to get the usual Christmas, Easter, and summer. That's right, because summer would have been the last one I had. I'd go home and used to have a train, used to have half the village kids there waiting for me to get home. They used to get the word that I was on me coming home on leave, and they would be all over the station. The station was a couple of miles from where we lived. Yeah. So that was alright. I used to go and stay with one of the with my sister, that's right. If I didn't talk to her, I used to swim, and of course I would go around fine. I wouldn't go home. I used to go to one of the elders.
What was their attitude towards you joining the Navy?
Oh, they were excited about it. I mean, naturally enough, they didn't want to see me going away. But I'm afraid I made my mind up and do it. So I didn't do what I went. And you're all right. And then after they were doing him, I think it was the October, tea time came.
So what happened to you after you left HMS Ganges?
I went aboard and joined HMS Barron down at Plymouth. She had just come out of a long refit. Well, in fact, I think she had changed from coal to oil, which she had done in the And that, of course, was my first experience of a ship, first time I'd seen a ship.
Richard Hughes, Reel 2.